This is Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places and vermin of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Today, let's check out this lovely little edible garden in Venice. It's on Abbot Kinney Boulevard. Jerry Gallion Miller points out raised beds of kale and other veggies that she sells to nearby restaurants. The plants are wrapped in clear, pest-proof plastic. And if you take a close gander, you'll see why.
But look, I don't want to gross you out, but see that guy right there? Stuck in the fence?
Oh, is that a rat?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a rat. A deceased rat. Dangling in between three chicken wire fences, with its head poking into a chicken coop. Jerry points it out to reporter Teddy Alvarez Nissen.
Oh, that's so brutal.
What he did was he got so fat that I have triple layered chicken wire, and he got in one part and couldn't get out the other, so he got stuck. And I didn't notice him. I think he's been there for a couple months now. I can't get him out.
That unfortunate rodent isn't operating alone. He's got lots of rat friends and lots of rat family, and they love this place.
They seem to like the Lacinato Tuscan kale. They left the arugula, and so they have a very refined palate.
And Jerry's got lots of company, too. Lots of people are seeing more rats. Since the beginning of the pandemic, rats seem to be everywhere, in every major city, and Los Angeles is no exception. They're popping up in your pantry, scurrying along your feet at your outdoor restaurant tables, and outsmarting your rat traps. What's the deal? Have they been breeding more this last year? Or are they just coming out of the woodwork in greater numbers? Are they getting smarter? Braver? Are we entering a rat-pocalypse? You've got questions. Reporters Teddy Alvarez Nissen and his brother Dano got together to bring you answers.
Hi, I'm Teddy Alvarez Nissen. And let's just start out with this. On the lunar calendar, 2020 is, very appropriately, the year of the rat. Traditionally, it symbolizes wealth and prosperity. While that may not be the reality for many people right now, it has certainly come true for one industry, exterminators.
It takes a cat to catch a rat.
This is Kat Herrera. She owns Cat's Pest Solutions in South Pasadena. She's a sole proprietor and manages a team of big, muscle-bound guys who lug around the equipment. Oh, and she wears hot pink cowboy boots and drives a hot pink truck and has an equally colorful backstory.
I started in 2010, and it was basically more for survival. Personal tragedy, roller bridge version. I had become homeless with my sons. We lived in our car. And when I went out into the field, I basically fell in love with the job. A rat was created, so I worked in the field for a couple years, and I was able to buy my house and get my kids back.
And there's more.
I was on a show called Verminators on season two, and so I was the only female on that show. And we went into Florida, wrestled alligators, chased peacocks, you name it.
It aired on the Discovery Channel.
This one?
That was like king size. Look at that.
What you got, Kat?
Kat got a rat.
Oh, that's a huge
awesome,
sucker.
Right?
That's just a tail hanging out, man.
Did you find anything?
Kevin.
Kevin, yeah. There's one in here.
There's a huge one in here.
How big?
I can smell it from here.
It's smelly.
Oh my God, that one's huge.
This rat smells like pure death.
Look at how big this one is. Look at the size of it.
Oh my God, that's...
Anyway, these days business is booming for Kat Herrera. Doubled, almost tripled in the last year, she said. That's true for several other pest control companies that we talked to in LA as well.
Okay, so the rats now are jumping in through. They've chewed through that wood, went underneath the cement, and they've tunneled this way to get underneath the house.
Kat's on a job at a big brick house in La Cañada, Flint Ridge. She ducks into a crawl space, stepping around small mountains of rat droppings in her pink boots, and points to all the tiny holes where rats tunnel through into the kitchen. The solution? Wire them shut.
It's almost like they've evolved. They're already smart and tenacious, but I feel like they've become smarter. I joke around with clients and say they're also reading Google. They're reading Google to try and figure out how to outsmart us.
Maybe the pandemic hasn't lasted so long they've actually evolved to be smarter, but their behavior has changed. My brother Dano takes it from here. Hey, Dano.
Hey, Teddy. Yeah, So apparently when all the restaurants closed in March, that really did a number on the rats.
Overnight, that food, beginning in March for most of the United States, everything went closed. Well, when those rats got up in the morning, so to speak, their morning is night, and came out to look for the restaurant garbage and everybody else's commercial garbage, there was nothing there. And so these rats, just like any mammal, went into starvation mode.
This is Bobby Corrigan. He's an urban rodentologist and research scientist who consults with New York City on how to deal with its rats. Also, to exterminators around the country, he's kind of a big deal.
Bobby Corrigan, he is the rat god. He is all knowledgeable. Absolutely. To me, being able to meet with him is like, honestly, meeting the president.
Lucky for me, I did get to meet him. And he says rats haven't been themselves lately.
They were more aggressive in trying to find food. So rats were found during the day, out in the daytime. They were found killing each other and cannibalizing each other.
But just because you see more rats doesn't mean there are more rats.
I suspect from my own surveys and my own knowledge, there's far fewer rats because of this pandemic, because it puts so much stress on rat colonies. And the paradox is the sightings in many cases have increased. They're out during the day when they normally would not be. They're stressed and acting a little bit, you know, disoriented, kind of bumping into things and bumping into each other, and people hear them getting into fights. So that generates a lot of calls, for example, to the city and to the pest control companies.
The guy really loves rats.
The rat is among the most intelligent and the most cautious in secretiveness. The rat gravitates all the time towards the shadows of your city and towards the nooks and crannies. We now know it can plan, it can make decisions, it can regret making bad decisions.
He might even like rats more than people.
If Martians visit us from another galaxy and landed here for a quick pass-through, they'd say, well, between the rodents and the humans, who's proven more successful? It's rodents.
But let's face it, most people don't like rats as much as Bobby Corrigan does. Most of us are usually pretty grateful when they're out of sight or dead.
So I tell people, I therapize, right? I have men jumping on a table, ah, cat! And I'm like, seriously, guy? That thing is way smaller than you. You're like 6'5". And I'm like, don't worry. I haven't lost respect for you yet. But it's just that whole thing. So for me, being able to come in, and I guess somebody mentioned to me today, it's like being a superhero, right?
So, when people come back to fill the streets after the pandemic, will rats still be hangry, so to speak? Bobby Corrigan says, don't worry about it.
There's going to be no evolution that occurred from this where they evolved into a different behavior and they became more aggressive on each other. You know, they're waiting for things to get back to normal, so to speak. Their reproduction is going to pick up right where it left off. They're going to skip a beat, just like we did.
It's not just people. COVID-19's got us all under pressure. But when we can finally start getting back to business, rats can finally start getting back to minding their own. At least a little bit more so than now. For KCRW, I'm Dano Alvarez-Nissen.
And I'm Teddy Alvarez-Nissen.
Moving on now with Greater LA on KCRW. For years now, crime statistics have been on a mostly downward trend, not just in Southern California, but in many parts of the United States as well. This year, the pandemic has been no different, but there are a couple of exceptions. Car thefts are up, and here in LA and many big cities, so are homicides. This past weekend, four people died at the hands of others, including a teenage boy shot to death while riding his bicycle. That raises the number to more than 300 homicides so far in 2020 in Los Angeles, a grim milestone that hasn't been seen in the city in more than a decade, and the year's not even over yet. Many of those killings have taken place in South LA. That's an area that's also been hit hard by COVID, and an area that the LAPD says has seen an increase in gang activity. Skip Townsend is the head of Second Call. This is a gang intervention organization that works in South LA. And he joins us right now. Actually, you're in Inglewood right now, aren't you, Skip?
Yes, I am. And thank you for having me.
What's going on in the city and pretty much elsewhere in greater LA? I mean, what are you seeing and hearing from the people that you talk to that would explain this increase in killings?
For the most part, I've heard that a lot of the homicides and killings that have been going on are not really gang related. There are a few exceptions. There are individuals who are randomly shooting some young kids who are going to different parks, antagonizing other communities. And that led to the uprising and the what we would call gang related shootings. But a lot of what's going on is, relationship based, people who know each other, whether it's domestic violence or whether it's family violence. A lot of situations have, come around to that where now they're killing each other instead of arguing and fighting. So I think it's a number of different reasons. I think COVID-19 has a lot to do with it, with individuals who are young, who are been in the house and don't have that social setting that they used to have, sitting around wanting to do things. I believe that also the money that was in the community, there was a lot of money in the community during the COVID because of different reasons, and that gave access to weapons. So people were able to buy and purchase firearms.
Your specialty, though, is gang intervention. And I know, again, LAPD is saying that many of these homicides do have gang ties. You're saying that that's not necessarily the case?
Well, let me give you an example of one homicide that happened on 32nd and Hill about a week ago, where there were two young women who were killed at the same location. Everybody who comes from their community was at that party. So those two young ladies were friends. And, because of arguing, because of fighting, because of things that have happened, it led to both of them being murdered. Both of them have gang ties. So how would LAPD document that? They document it as a gang-related homicide. But those are two mothers. One had three children, the other had two. So they're not, I would never look at that as a gang homicide. I would look at it as a community that did not get in the middle of something that they should have.
Because of the work in the community that you do, I mean, not only do you have this increase in violence, but you also have to deal with the restrictions of the pandemic as well. I mean, there are so many things going on at the same time. How much harder does that make things for you?
Well, it really makes it a lot harder. The pandemic has stepped in and made it to where we can't have our weekly meetings. So we meet a lot on Zoom, and, as much as we're getting to meet or getting to learn the ways of Zoom and the connections, we lose that personal one-on-one. We lose that personal touch, that social environment that would happen if we had different meetings. We're not able to have that. So accountability for other intervention workers is out the window as well, because we're not meeting. We're not being able to hold them accountable, and we hold them accountable via computer screen, a computer board. So a lot of that has played a major part. It has turned a direction. Like for myself, we're passing out turkeys here in the city of Inglewood. So instead of doing gang intervention, the way that I get individuals together is by passing out food. So although I might have 10 or 15 individuals from one community, the message is different. We're trying to be a family. We're trying to communicate how to help each other. But at the same time, we need to have one-on-one conversations, like, real conversations about what's going on in the community, and asking individuals not to retaliate, not to go back and look for another fight or look to hurt someone who has hurt you. Those are the things that are getting lost with the COVID-19 and the restrictions.
And there's no communication, like in-person communication, right? Looking somebody
exactly.
in the eye.
Yeah, exactly. Prior to COVID, when there was a shooting, intervention workers would be tasked to show up not only at the scene, but go to the hospital. So now we can't ask them to show up at the hospital. And if they go to the scene, it's very difficult to, social distance. And, so at this point, it's not a requirement. So the requirement now is that they reach out to the family, reach out to the community. And then, of course, their requirement is not to show up in person and report what they're doing or how they need help, but to answer on a computer screen. So I could sit at home in my pajamas, and I can respond to a homicide scene. I can respond to a fight at home in my pajamas, and then I can document what I've done using my laptop or my computer at home. And it just, you have to imagine what effect does that really have on a community, on the family, or the people who are hurt. You know, as interventionists, we don't look for the same things that law enforcement look for. Law enforcement is looking for suspects. They're looking for clues on what happened so they can find out what happened. And what we're looking for is who are the people who are hurt? Who are the victims? Who are the people who are going to feel slighted? Because those are the people who are going to come back and look for retaliation or look to right the wrong. So those are things I just can't get over a computer screen. You know, if I'm in person, I can hear people crying. I can hear people talking. And I can gravitate towards them, but I'm going to miss all that by calling on the phone and responding via emails.
Yeah, you know, Skip, earlier in the summer, there were these protests, thousands, tens of thousands of people who showed up protesting police killings over the summer. And we talk about police violence and brutality, Black Lives Matter. And, you know, there was a demand that the budget be cut at LAPD by $150 million. The city did that. Actually, there's been a demand that the city defund the police in general. That didn't happen, but there was a large cut in its budget. Chief Michael Moore says it's really bad timing, that he's trying to put more officers on the street in South L.A. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, first of all, I think that Chief Michael Moore is very progressive, and I like his style. I wasn't happy when he came into office, but I like the way that he is looking at policing. But let's just remember, he's just one man. So there's a system inside of LAPD that is horrible. And the system is which allows for individuals to defend themselves after they've killed a community member. So law enforcement will hide behind the badge, hide behind the color of blue when they've shot an individual in the community. We don't get any information on those officers. However, you get all the information about the individual who was shot. We find out how much time he did in prison, if he was on parole. We find out all the negative things, but we don't know anything about the officers. So there has to be some sort of accountability. There has to be some sort of equal. The justice scales are imbalanced. It has to become equal in order for the community to feel safe. And if the community does not feel safe with the current law enforcement, I wouldn't say defund them, but that $150 million was $150 that was coming from the community, additional going to law enforcement, who's already at $1.7 billion. And 70% of that $1.7 billion goes to the salaries of law enforcement. So they are making $200,000 a year servicing communities that barely make $40,000 to $50,000 a year. So once again, that scale is unbalanced.
So less money for LAPD, more money for social services? That's what you're saying.
Exactly. More money for social services. I would never want to send the police department to a mental health situation. There's a SMART team that works from 9 to 5. There's a SMART team. LAPD has a SMART team. I believe it's two units that are citywide units. They're not even specific to an area. They're specific to the city of Los Angeles. And they work 9 to 5 Monday through Friday. That is saying that the gray area, the area where they need the most help, they're not invested in that gray area. They're invested in more patrol. We need more officers who understand mental health, understand mental illness, understand de-escalation.
Skip, do you think the number, you know, we're at more than 300 homicides, you think that number is going to keep going up during this pandemic?
Well, I think that the violence, I think that the hurt people don't understand January to December and the reporting months. I think that the violence and the homicides will continue probably till about February, March. It starts raining. People calm down. You know, once we start getting off of the COVID restrictions, I believe that the homicides will eventually reduce themselves.
Skip Townsend, head of Second Call, a gang intervention organization that works in South Los Angeles. Skip, as always, thanks for your time, man. Take care.
All right, thank you.
Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. 20,000 people tested positive for COVID-19 in California yesterday. That shattered a one-day record during this pandemic. Sadly, LA County hit a record, too, with more than 6,000 cases reported. So how are things going COVID-wise in the County of Orange? Spoiler alert, not so well. Yesterday, OC also set a record with the most reported coronavirus cases it's ever seen in a single day. And there are no signs the virus will slow down moving into Thanksgiving. Gustavo Arellano writes for the LA Times. He's here with KCRW's Orange County line. Hey, Gustavo.
Hola, Steve.
What was the number in Orange County?
1,422, beats the old record for one day of coronavirus cases by over 100. In the past week alone, you've had 2 days with coronavirus cases over 1,000. We have not seen that since the first huge wave that happened over the summer.
Obviously, we're getting fresh numbers today, so we'll see if more records will be broken going forward. But put these numbers, though, into perspective for us, Gustavo. Why are we seeing such a surge and happening so fast in OC?
Just like the rest of California, if not the rest of the United States, people really think coronavirus is over, or they have coronavirus fatigue. So they're hanging out with large groups of people that they shouldn't be hanging out with. And they're not wearing masks on top of that. And here in Orange County, especially, it's almost endemic. You know, it's ironic in a way, a pandemic. You also have an endemic of just stupidity, for lack of a better term. We pick a lot, of course, on Huntington Beach, where the type of city where coronavirus truthers get elected to Congress and also to city council. But even my hometown of Anaheim, over the weekend, I was at somewhere in Anaheim, let's put it that way, and I heard at least three separate parties in Latino households, and I knew there were Latino households because they were playing mariachi and banda and norteño. They seemed to be very happy, and I seriously doubt anyone was wearing masks or practicing social distancing there.
I want to get to Huntington Beach in a second and some other places, too. But let's first talk about the public health response and the messaging from health officials. Are they putting any new policies in place?
The most recent one happened this past week where the county health agency said restaurants can no longer have diners indoors. And I know this because, of course, my wife runs a restaurant. You still have outdoors dining and you're not going to see the same restrictions, at least so far, nor do I think it'll happen like what's going to happen in LA County, where all outdoor dining is supposed to stop tomorrow on Wednesday.
So, yeah, LA County is closing it down tomorrow night, just in time for Thanksgiving. So you don't think there's any sense that OC will follow suit? And they just stopped indoor dining, but outdoor dining is still okay.
Oh, yeah. No, look, Orange County is going to push as much against the coronavirus limit as possible. Remember, this is a board of supervisors that earlier in the year didn't stand by the former healthcare officer who was getting death threats from people and getting doxxed online. The current one, Clayton Chow, he's trying his best, but he's also doesn't seem to be as anti-coronavirus as the previous person, Nicole Quick. The board of supervisors, they really want coronavirus to be over, but viruses don't pay attention to economies or people's wishes.
No, they don't. And, you know, nobody likes to be told what to do. But this virus is not only bad everywhere, it's particularly bad, worse in some of the poorest neighborhoods. The hardest hit are the areas with the lowest incomes. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah, it's really sad. Anaheim, you know, my hometown of Anaheim and Santana, where my wife has her store, those two cities, they're the two biggest cities in Orange County, mind you, but they account for about 40% of all coronavirus cases and deaths because they also happen to be some of the most Latino cities, or at least, you know, immigrant heavy cities and also poor cities in Orange County. And I think this is actually, now I know this is why the rest of Orange County doesn't seem to care about coronavirus or thinks it's not real, because it's not affecting them. For instance, it's not affecting Mission Viejo as much as it's affecting, you know, all the neighborhoods off Bristol and Santana. So why should someone in Mission Viejo care about what's happening in Santana? That, to me, just shows that, you know, it shows the eternal disconnect between working class Orange County and the rest of Orange County.
And given all of this information that we have about who it affects and obviously the numbers that are just going through the roof, what's the response from the public? You mentioned Huntington Beach. You have a column out that calls it Angry Town, USA. Why are so, I mean, people, I understand people have COVID concerns and fatigue, but people are, they're really mad in spite of science.
It's the tyranny, man. Gruesome, newsome. And you think Huntington Beach is bad. I did write a column for the LA Times about just how it's become this epicenter of just rage this year between hating coronavirus and lockdowns. But at least Huntington Beach is not San Clemente. Over the weekend, there was actually a bonfire where people were throwing their masks in the bonfire. You think, oh my Lord, these are our neighbors and they're so ascientific and ahistorical. May God bless them. And more importantly, may God protect us from these loons.
I mean, there are a lot of people who are scared, but there are a lot of people who are angry. And again, going forward, getting into a holiday weekend and, of course, the holidays themselves, Hanukkah and Christmas coming up as well. There's so much to talk about. And this virus just isn't going anywhere and getting a whole lot worse. Gustavo Arellano, who writes for The LA Times and a regular here, of course, on Greater LA. Gustavo, thanks.
Gracias.
That's going to do it for us this evening. Tomorrow, how homeless shelters and food pantries and the volunteers who typically help are getting creative for Thanksgiving. And speaking of which, what is your plan for the holiday, for Thanksgiving? Are you staying home? Are you getting together with family despite the pandemic? I mean, what do you have in mind? Are you keeping it simple? Try not to eat everything within reach? We want to know your plans. Tell us what you're up to at kcrw.com/Thanksgiving. And while you're there, subscribe to the podcast, like so many of your fellow Angelinos are doing, kcrw.com/GreaterLA. Whatever your holiday plan, please, please do it safely. Jenna Cagle, Kevin Tidmarsh, Sonia Geis, Phil Richards, Ray Guarna, Paul Smith, Mike Newport, Amy Ta, Sue Margulies, and Christian Bordahl all made the show happen this evening. I'm Steve Piatakis. Thanks for your ears and for your time. Have a great night.